Welcome to this Nutrition Counseling Roundtable call. Today is April 26th of 2019. And for those of you who may not have been on these calls before, they're really just an very informal gathering, not any structured seminar or anything. The overall topic is the counseling process in a nutrition care setting, but beyond that, you guys bring up the topics, what your concerns are. A few logistics, if you have a lot of noise in your background, I don't hear any now, but if you do or anticipate that you will, you can mute your phone, and if you can't do that on your phone, you could do it using this system, which would be 4-star, and that would allow you to still hear, but we wouldn't be able to hear you. And if you wanted to unmute, then you would do 4-star again. Okay. It's fun when we can begin the calls with positive stuff as opposed to struggles, though we don't have to. Maybe what some of the skills you're experimenting with and the wonderful things that are happening. I will share one resource. I just did firm up another date for the counseling intensive, this one in Charleston, South Carolina, the first weekend of October. The only other one I have this scheduled this year is the end of October in Philadelphia, the Friday and Saturday right before FENCE, the Food and Nutrition Expo and Conference, whatever it's called, starts in Philadelphia. And the location is about 2 blocks from the convention center, so it'll be very convenient for anyone coming to the convention in October. So who wants to chime in with anything they'd like to share or ask? I'll mention I do have a question that was emailed in from someone who can't make it, and I'll throw that in later. So, who wants to jump in? Looks like we've only got 6 people on the call, so you're going to have to...
Hello, can you guys hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
I'm in the car on speaker, so I'm about to park and stop and shop. I'd stop and shop if this went off right, and I'm going to hope that the food is fairly fresh and restocked since they were closed for a while. this is Diane Alpern from Western Mass, and I just wanted to share something positive that I was in Philadelphia, actually for the first time 2 weeks ago. Is that where you're based, Molly?
Yes.
Are you based in Philly? Yeah, so I hadn't been there before, except maybe once years ago to a FENCE convention, but I didn't have a chance to see the city much. But my husband is an internist, and the American College of Physicians, ACP, which is like 7,000 providers from all over the world, came to their big conference a couple weeks ago. And I went with my husband in order to attend programs related to nutrition and obesity and diabetes management. Mm-hmm. And I was so pleased at how many of the sessions were related to motivational interviewing, behavior change, how to reflect back to patients, how to roll with resistance. And I went to a whole bunch of seminars myself on this. And the providers of internal medicine are doing more and more of this approach. So it was very inspiring to see that.
Oh, that's great. Wonderful news, and thank you for sharing that with us. Well, I'm sure a lot of the sessions that you particularly chose would be in that direction, and yet it does show that primary care doctors are really getting into taking health behavior change seriously. Oh, that's great.
Yes, and taking nutrition seriously. There was an hour and a half session dedicated to a dozen different nutrition-related medical conditions, and it's like, here's what you need to know to let your patients know about. And that was exciting too. Yeah.
Wow, that must have been fun. Encouraging. Okay. Did did you have a question, a concern or question that you were wanting to bring to the group?
I do. It does have to do with the rolling with resistance
issue.
I have had
this diabetes patient who he has Medicaid, the MassHealth plan, which means he has an unlimited number of visits with no copays. So as
wow.
a result, I see this guy every month and a half, month and a half or two for like the past year. And no matter what I do with him, he doesn't change a thing. He keeps coming in. He keeps being home all day and eating the whole bag of potato chips and not eating regular meals and dealing with not exercising and not, you know, embarking on portion control or mindful eating, and his weight doesn't change and his blood sugars don't change, and he keeps wanting to come in and talk about it, and he's got, you know, mental health issues like depression. But I feel so stuck with him, and at one point I just feel like saying, well, Tim, why are you still coming in? It's like you don't seem to want to do anything differently. He's very pleasant. But I feel like at what point do I just kind of like, I've tried everything I could think of. And it's like, okay, he's just going to do what he's going to do. It's frustrating.
Well,
yeah.
My guess is that there are loads of other people on this call who have experienced the exact same thing. And so, well, we can talk about it all together for a bit. I'll also mention that tip number 57, titled Client Who Isn't Making Any Changes,
yeah.
really fits into that category, and I'd be glad
okay,
to
I will
send
look at
you
that.
A copy of that. Sure. It's actually included in volume 3 of the Practice Workbook, so it isn't up on my site anymore. But if you want me to send you that particular chapter, it's there's a chapter on ambivalence to change. It does make sense to address first the specific thing you said. Should I say something to him? You know, should I basically, well, some people would call it confronting. I would call it pointing out something that's true.
Mm-hmm.
And let's take a little poll of the other people on the call. Who else on the call might have an opinion about whether to say something to a client like this who keeps coming back and isn't making any changes?
This is Marlia. I'm on the West Coast in California. Uh-huh. And a patient like this, I find myself with the idea of, I guess confronting would be a word. I would probably use more of an observational. I would say I would treat it more like I want to let him know what I see, and his he's coming in, he's doing this and doing that, and maybe some of the confliction between the what he's doing and what he's not doing.
Yeah. So, and it sounds like what you're describing could, in MI, be called pointing out discrepancy.
Right, like on the one hand you say that on the one hand you say that you're you know, when you start eating the package of cookies, you eat half the package at a time, and yet you keep bringing these boxes of cookies back from the grocery store. They don't magically appear in your cabinet, you know, like what's going on here, you know? Like
but that's one way to look at discrepancy.
Into the house. I actually said something like that yesterday.
Yeah.
Kind of laugh,
an MI way to say, to point out discrepancy would be to in sort of one sentence include both you're worried about your health and you've talked about your grandchildren or whatever, you know, things that you've heard that would make him want to make changes. And I hear that the cookies are still coming into the house, or, you know, so it's sort of putting the both things together in one sentence. How does that sound, Diana?
Yeah. It's like this is happening, and yet this is also happening. So, yeah. Where do we go with that?
That's interesting.
They're opposing. They can, and let them know that they can hold, like, two opposing things can happen at the same time.
Right. Yeah. And then it's essentially putting it back on his lap, gently, respectfully, and saying, that's interesting. what do you make of that? You know, and sort of ask him to move forward with it. Anybody else have other ideas for clients who are not making changes?
Molly?
Yes?
Oh, hi. This is Krista. I'm calling from Connecticut.
Hello.
One of my thoughts would be, which I've tried a couple of times with patients in this similar situation, is to, if they've been seeing you for a while, is to maybe review their goals of why they initially came in and what they wanted to accomplish and see if something had changed. Just to see if maybe they're just not interested in changing anymore.
Yeah, you never know. Yeah, Krista, so what you're essentially saying is, or one way to look at it is that you're going to evoke from this person their change talk again.
Correct.
Even if you know when you remember what their reasons to change were, or, you know, what their goals were, you're essentially getting them to say them again.
Right.
And indeed, if something, I mean, what if his A1C actually is down? I don't know.
His A1C keeps staying the same. It's like 6.7, 6.7, 6.8, not on diabetes meds, you know, BMI of about 35. I mean, he's just getting away with it. I mean, his, you know, his A1C is not going up. His blood sugars are not that bad, but he only checks fasting and he won't check after eating.
You know, another way to sort of possibly, excuse me, reframe what you and he are doing is that you may be helping him not backslide and not, you know, have things be even worse. I don't know. You don't want to necessarily say that unless sort of he agrees that that's what you're doing.
Because
it sounds like he certainly could make some beneficial changes. But that would be a reframe. Way to look at it.
Yeah, but you know, I haven't in a while asked him to really articulate his goals, to really go over that, to see if he can find any kind of motivation that will help shift him. And of course, the mental health issues when someone has depression, and anxiety, and unemployment, and you know, they're hanging around the house all day. You know, it's just I mean, and then there's the partner who's obese and she's
what
working all day. She's trying to keep him on track, but she's very overweight, and she's trying to diet, but she also brings the cookies into the house, too, and then chides him for snacking all day. So it's like it's a whole dynamic with a relationship, too. So,
Right. Does he see a social worker or a therapist at all? Or?
Yes, he does. He has a weekly therapist.
He does. Okay, good. So that's already in place. You don't need to make that referral. Good.
Right, right. That's always one of the first things I ask people about when I see mental health issues going on.
So, Diana, how are we doing with the specific question of you know, what do you say to him? Do you confront him, or you know, how do you feel? Do you feel like you have an answer?
Well, he's coming in again in about a month and a half, and if there's been sort of no change in his weight or his, you know, blood sugars. You know, I guess I would say, you know, you're coming in, you know, to see me regularly, and this shows that you're really motivated and, you know, that you want to make some kind of changes to your habits. And yet I see that you're still continuing to binge snack and not eat regular meals. And, you know, what is it that you're really looking for to happen? If you could wave a magic wand and picture yourself, you know, kind of eating in a way that's going to support your health, what would that look like? I don't know. Have him articulate sort of the vision of a healthier
right,
eating
sort of
pattern?
Back up a few steps. Yeah. Might you be interested in a slight tweak to the wording?
Please.
Okay. I noticed you used the word yet. You said you care about this and whatever, and yet you're doing this, and that is a sort of a step back from but, you know, which is a little stronger. It does tend to subtly set up a potential sort of argument or you know, a confrontation sort of, or a really subtle but sort of like you're criticizing him. And it depends on how sensitive he is to such things. But it's there's a potential for him sort of feeling criticized. So the wording I tend to use is more, I tend to look at it as the Columbo character that Peter Falk used to play, of sort of, help me understand this. I'm a little confused here. So you came in and these are your concerns, and I've noticed that we come up with these ideas and then nothing seems to happen. Can you help me understand this? You know, that to me is a way to get around.
Help me understand this. Yeah.
I don't know if that would be your style. But,
that totally could be. And I remember also and instead of yet or but is always the better connector between the first and second part of the reflection. Okay, that's very helpful.
Diana, it does seem like you've got a little more elbow room here and have a sense of where to proceed.
Yes, this is helpful. Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Well, let's check in with some other people in terms of any resources or fun, exciting things that are happening and or challenges or questions.
Hi there. I joined late. So I'm not sure I didn't quite catch the full beginning of that.
You're welcome to jump in.
You know, yeah, but that really spoke to something that I am dealing with right now, sort of the tail end of what I caught of that in your recommendation with dealing with a client. I have someone who is on some fronts very motivated to change, has a lot of habits that need changing, and it really comes down to sort of being willing to unpack that and look at what they are doing that needs to be changed, and there's a big resistance coming up. And this person has a lot of anxious tendencies and already sees a therapist and knows that they need that kind of support.
A good thing.
It is a good thing that she's got sort of those things in place. But I'm finding, for example, came in to see me today, had not even read any of my notes or summary of our meeting, suggestions for what the plan was to do between visits, and hadn't even opened the email, and came in, and I'm just not sure, you know, what she was expecting to happen, because nothing happened.
Right, and that's an interesting. I think we all know that often what happens if somebody doesn't do the follow up you suggested, they just don't show for their appointment.
Right.
So when someone does come in, that is a little different situation. I besides all the things we talked about with Diana. Oh, by the way, what's your first name?
I'm sorry, it's Paula.
Paula, hi, Paula. Besides those things, if this is someone who does have a therapist, and this is a client that you're working with ongoing for a little while, is that
yes.
right? Yeah. Have you gotten a release to speak with the therapist?
No, I was thinking about doing that next.
That might be a good idea because... Mm-hmm. You may be able to find out from the therapist more about how this person's system works and also what the therapist is doing. For instance, if the therapist is doing some very cognitive and behavioral stuff, you two could really be on a team together and you could approach the behavioral stuff the way the therapist does or, you know, something like that.
I kind of can see loud and clear there are some big emotional issues and sort of deeper things going on there that she doesn't seem to be willing to unpack. You know, she doesn't even very evasive in her answering of questions, for example, and gets us very sidetracked in the conversation such that sometimes I end up leaving the session and have missed vital information that I wanted to gather because our conversation just fritters away into this nothingness and I have a hard time reining it back in because what she's saying is important but on a completely different level And I don't want to not acknowledge that and discuss what she's saying, because it has importance to her, and it is important maybe in the bigger picture, but it doesn't really relate to making progress or answering my question or getting moving forward. For example, every time I ask what she is eaten, I get a lot of, well, it was a busy day, and this happened, and that happened, and we start talking about a million things, and I still don't know what she ate. And then we start talking about stress, handling stress, and I leave, and I'm like, okay, I still don't know what she ate, because she really doesn't want to talk about what she eats. And it's a way of her own, you know, it's her own diversion, but it's also her own way of expressing her overwhelm.
Right, and that's another thing I would specifically ask the therapist, if you can get a chance to talk to him or her. Say, this is what happens in our sessions. Does it happen in yours? Tell me what your, you know, how you look at that and what it's best for me to do. Now, I've also written on this specific topic, the topic of staying on topic, you know, getting back to nutrition, basically. And it was tip number 15, which is in my first practice workbook. I think I also sent it out as a repeat a month or so ago. But if you don't have volume one, email me and I'll send you a copy of this particular one. It's one of the most popular tips I've ever written. Because, of course, this happens. I really, since this person does have a therapist, I really recommend speaking with a therapist and bringing up the specific things you notice that get in the way. Not that the therapist is going to fix it for you. But it may help the therapist as well a little bit to understand a little bit of how her client is with someone else. But there's so many things. I mean, it could be ADD. It could be anxiety. It could be layers of trauma that a lot of people who have experienced different levels of trauma, they have so many different parts of them that avoid things that they're really good at, and they don't even know they're doing it usually.
Survival.
So there are all sorts of things that might be going on. Not that you're going to get totally in the weeds with it, but now, then when you're actually in the session, what thoughts do you have so far about how to guide her back to nutrition?
So far, I kind of just redirect and kind of when I can and time allows, I'll redirect and say, so let's get back on track. Tell me again what you have for breakfast, or, you know, just kind of restarting the question over again. And sometimes that works and we get an answer. Other times it takes us down a different path. Oh, I didn't sleep well last night. And, you know, all of a sudden now we're talking about how we slept. And that's okay. You know, again, it's sometimes it's really valuable information, and other times it's just a little bit of venting. But it just definitely seems like there's a lot of history there and a lot of emotional stuff that's really coming up and getting in the way. And
Even talking about
just talking about anything personal, really. Sort of taking a look at what's happening. I think she is very much externally focused in her day-to-day, moment-to-moment. And so the moments that she is required to look inward and in the mirror are very uncomfortable. It doesn't really matter what it's about, you know. So I think it would be about just about anything, you know, anything personal in words.
Right, and that's
so
likely something you'll hear from the therapist, and hopefully the therapist is helping her eventually, slowly work with that. I only have maybe one little thing to add to what you're doing now. I think certainly you're obviously able to keep track of, ooh, we've gotten quite off track. We've only got 10 minutes left, you know, and you can do all that in your head. And the only thought I have is inserting a tiny little thing before doing the directing back, something that very short and sweet, acknowledges something about what she's saying. And even if it's just like, wow, you have a lot going on, or I get it, that's, you know, that's a big deal, or something like that. And then without letting her getting word in there, then say, well, let's see, since I'm your nutritionist here, let's see what, you know, and then get back.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
I have been doing that a lot because a lot of tears come up, a lot of it seems to just be, like I said, a difficult process for her. And so I acknowledge the stress and the difficulty with taking, you know, a magnifying glass to your life. And, you know, as she says things, you know, it sounds like, you know, that's really stressful for you. It sounds like you're, you know, having a lot on your plate, you know, just the different things along the way. So I feel like I've been sort of reflecting that to her a bit throughout the sessions, because I do feel like she needs that validation. She's single and unmarried, and she's divorced. And so she's been single quite a while and lives alone and works from home. So she's a bit isolated too and doesn't talk to people much.
Right, yeah. She has a lot of things going on. And, of course, there is a possibility that she just is not able to work on these behaviors at this point.
Right.
And
at
or
this moment.
Another possibility is she might, if she, if you and she can narrow down and, you know, simplify or make smaller her steps or goals, she may actually be able to do something. It may take a while to sort that out.
I agree. I thought about whether it's possible to scale this way back to really, really tiny goals and work on them in, you know, almost really baby steps. And, you know, then part of me feels really guilty because, you know, it's costing her money. And in terms of, like, efficiency and doing my job, it feels a little, you know, not great to charge her money for a session and all we're doing is working on this one tiny little piece, even though that's maybe all she can handle. You know,
well,
just,
and it would not, of course, be at all uncommon if she really did think that she was going to be able to do all sorts of things until she got in the middle of it. It sounds like she's not someone who has a whole lot of insight or ability to look at what she can and can't do. You might find benefit also with reviewing tip number 4, which is also in volume 1, and if you don't have it, I'll send you a PDF of it, asking for direction from your clients. They're can be a benefit every few visits or something to say, let's step back a little bit. Let's review where you came from, what you're doing, and how's this working for you? Is this getting where you want to go? You know, those kinds of questions, which would allow her, hopefully, to say she's discouraged or whatever. There may be a place for that kind of conversation. That kind of conversation is not something that we were taught how to do. I was as a social worker, but as a dietitian, we weren't necessarily taught how to do that. But it's okay to ask to step back and say, how are we doing?
Yeah, that's a great, it's a great suggestion. I'm fairly new to nutrition. I've just been just graduated this past summer with my master's, and it's a career change for me, completely different from my.
Well,
my
congratulations.
Previous life. And thank you. So I have so much material in front of me that I'm devouring, so many books and so many things. So I have definitely read through your tips at some point, but it is not on the forefront of my just because there's still a fire hose of information coming into my brain every day.
I get it. Well, we learn best by cycling back through learning experiences over and over again.
So I will go back through and take a look through those. But you are in a great position with your dual abilities, because I often feel like, gosh, I wish I were a therapist right now, because that's what they really need in this moment, you know?
Yeah, a lot of them do. Well, let's see. We have 11 people on the call. Who else would like to chime in to either share something or ask a question? Oh, actually, before I forget, let me ask the question that was emailed in, and we'll all look at this. Tracy Malone emailed and said she couldn't make it on the call, but apparently in a recent, I'm reading her email, in a recent discussion on the Health at Every Size Therapists and Nutritionists Facebook group, the topic of weighing clients came up. Someone had asked about what is the best scale to use. Many responses addressed the need to move away from putting so much emphasis on weight, and that doing weight checks, whether they're blind or not, reinforced the power of body weight. Many people were recommending not doing weight checks. So my question is, where are things, you know, what is being done, what is being taught within the eating disorders field that addresses moving away from putting so much weight on weight? And what about using weight as a measure of recovery, which is a big, big topic that very often comes up. Is there anyone here who's willing to jump in and suggest at least one answer? There are probably lots of answers for that.
I have that very same question, so I'm eager to hear what people have to say.
Okay.
This is Diane from Massachusetts again.
Okay.
I try to more and more be taking the focus off that number on the scale, which so many clients seem to fixate on. And I myself have actually off and on been going to Weight Watchers for a few years, and they use the term non-scale victories, NSVs.
Oh,
you know, the
oh that's nice.
So I had a client last week who was very distraught because she's been really, like, as she says, so good. You know, she's been doing everything that I was suggesting she'd do, and she's cut out the added sugars, and she's eating all these veggies, and she's exercising, and she's walking, and, you know, whatever. But it's like she still hasn't lost weight, and it's been a couple of months, and she was feeling so discouraged. And I realized she was at that point where it's like she's kind of feeling like, oh, it's not worth it, I'm not losing weight. And I just kept kind of affirming that what's most important is that you're developing a healthy eating pattern. Don't worry about that number, because eventually if you focus on healthy habits, the number will shift. And I said, are you comfortable getting on the scale today? You know, when did you check your weight last? And it was a few weeks back. And she said she did want to know. And I always give people the option of weighing themselves. And she had dropped 3 pounds in the past 3 weeks after, like, not having any weight drop. And I said, so, you know, so sometimes the scale takes a little while to kind of catch up with your healthier, you know, habits. And, you know, that's the main thing. And I read a study somewhere that a lot of indicators like blood pressure and blood sugars and LDL cholesterol, all this stuff, has often improved in people who improve the quality of their diet, even if there's no weight change.
Even if there was no weight change. And, indeed, that kind of information that you literally have seen in research, right? You can you can inform clients about and to attempt to counteract or at least add to the prevalent, you know, thing out there in the world that it all is about weight. That if you're heavy, you're unhealthy, and if you're thin, you're healthy. Period. End of story. Which we all know is ridiculous. Yeah, and I'm hearing I'm hearing you're talking about essentially working with outcomes and helping a client expand the outcomes that they're looking for, not just the number on the scale. And I wrote a tip on that, number 29, which would be in volume 2. If anybody wants a copy of that, I'll email that chapter to you. Working with outcomes might be useful. And I also realized I wrote a tip on to weigh or not to weigh. And that one is still on my website because that's no, it isn't. I'm sorry. It's in volume 3. It's 74. But that sort of looks at the – and I'll send Tracy to that too, that gives some of the pros and cons. There clearly are pros and cons. With someone who is severely underweight and needs to weigh more, in order to be healthy, if they have a significant restricting eating disorder. Unfortunately, from a medical perspective, keeping an eye on that number does give some useful feedback. And it becomes such a such a focus so easily. And I don't know if I'm assuming some of you sometimes do blind weights, where you just jot down the number, and the client doesn't see it. They have to have agreed to do it that way. I have several clients that I do that with because they want me to have the ability to reassure them that their weight is not zooming up or, you know, it doing something that they're scared of it doing. And I can look at the numbers and reassure them that without them getting into the weeds of, you know, half a pound here and there, that kind of thing. They're sort of using me to filter the number and put it into something that has some meaning. Who was the person on this call who just said they have that question as well?
That's Paula.
Oh, okay. How are we doing with that question?
I would be interested in hearing. I sort of have been managing it the same way in terms of asking people and, you know, gauging whether this is something they want to know about and keep track of or are just as happy to set aside and focus on their health goals. But I'm wondering what
mm-hmm.
others are doing. And,
yeah.
again, I'm brand new, so I'm wondering how more experienced people are handling that.
I'll throw something in that I believe I put in the tip, and that is that, and particularly for someone like you, Paula, who's relatively new with this, if somebody says, oh, yeah, let's get weighed, I want to be weighed in, I want to see what it is, you know, after a few weeks or something of doing it, say, tell me what effect does seeing the number have on you? What, tell me what happens in your head, you know, what you do with that number. Because it really varies from one person to another. And there's some
right.
people for whom it's just a reality check. It's a really good reality check, you know. It's just facts. That's the minority of people, though, I think. There are people who use it to really beat themselves up if it doesn't
oh,
do what
yeah.
they want it to. And then you can say, that's interesting. I wonder if we want to relook at this. And overall, is it helping or is it hurting to look at the number? You decide, you know, and just helping them explore it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it, keep
mm-hmm.
it as sort of an open question for a while.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Sure. I frankly am willing to do either no weight, unless the person's quite underweight. I'm willing to do either no weight or blind weight or have them see the number. I do, though, I'm only willing to do that if we very carefully go over what it's like for them and what is going to work best for them. That's the key. If we've gone through that and they really satisfy me that whatever we've chosen is really the best idea, you know, we'll go with it.
Okay.
So...
And how do you set that up with them? How do you ask them?
Well, with the clients I have who are nutrition clients, they all have eating disorders. I don't do MNT anymore.
Okay.
So when I see them for the first time, I'll say, so what do you, I do have a scale here. We can use that or not. What has your experience been? Usually they've been dealing with the eating disorder for a while anyway. So they already know. Or they're coming right out of treatment where it was blind weighing or whatever.
Would you tend to address it the same way with people who don't have a classified eating disorder, who are just struggling with various health issues and possibly their weight?
Yeah. I would. Yeah. I would. I would not assume with any client who walks in the door that I know how they handle that seeing the number, or
right.
even how they handle reporting to me what their weight is.
Mm-hmm.
Because, of course, that's a loaded issue for lots of people, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm fairly careful to say, to ask them in with a more open-ended kind of way. Tell me your weight or your experience over the years. What's your history been with your? I'll often say body size over the years. And if they report to me exactly what the numbers were, you know, what their weight was, then they're comfortable talking about it that way. And there are other people you notice mm-hmm. they avoid the numbers. So, you know, I take my
mm-hmm.
cue from them.
Cues. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So how are we doing on this? Anybody else have anything they want to jump in about that topic of weighing or not and how to handle that? Okay. I did forget to mention that I need to stop at about 4 or 5 minutes before the hour, because I have a meeting starting at 1 o'clock right here in my office, so I have to be ready for it. But we do have some more time, so what else? What else is up?
If no one has a question, I don't want to monopolize, so I'm happy to stay quiet. But I also don't want to waste precious time with you. So I'm going to throw
Paula
out a topic.
Again?
It's Paula again.
Yeah, I thought I'd recognize your voice. Okay, sure.
Do you have any sort of tried and true tips for the best way to approach a struggle spot in terms of behavior change for someone? Everybody's going to be different what that struggle spot might be. Some people might be hung up on, you know, not exercising or having to start that
mm-hmm.
routine or making time for it, or somebody else might be hung up on that they have to eat X, Y, and Z for breakfast and they can't deviate from that, or, you know, what have
mm-hmm.
you. There's all different hang-ups. Any sort of, you know, psychology-based best ways to kind of tackle that, you know, inertia that you're encountering?
Did you say inner?
Inertia.
Inertia. Okay, inertia.
Yeah, inertia from the client's end.
Well, strictly from a motivational interviewing point of view, you would do a bunch of reflecting,
mm-hmm.
open-ended questions and then reflecting. And if in that, one thing that becomes clear is, you know, probably to you and the client possibly, is that the sedentariness is the, you know, the big elephant in the room or whatever,
mm-hmm.
you just remark on it. You say it.
Mm-hmm.
In some situations, it may make sense to also use a complex reflection besides an explicit, you know, direct reflection about what's happening, what the stuck place is. If it feels true, you could say something like, it seems to me you're stuck. You've got this sort of place where you don't have any elbow room, or it doesn't feel like you have any elbow room. Have I got that right? Sort of, you know, getting them to, inviting them to focus on it. And if they agree that is a stuck place for them, an inertia place, and I don't know if they'd use the word inertia, but a stuck place or a
mm-hmm.
Something that they just have never been able to do. So you agreed that that's what you're going to talk about first. You get permission. You can say,
mm-hmm.
okay. So we could spend most of the time today talking about this particular issue of getting off the couch or whatever way they put it. Is that okay? You know, get their permission. And then, I mean, you could use some of the formats of MI. One would be to go back to importance to make the change. Tell me, on a scale of 1 to 10, how important is it to you to become somewhat more active, where 1 is, it wouldn't do any good for you, you don't care about it, and 10 is, you know, it's something really important, and then you play with whatever number they come up with, and possibly give some education about what exercise does or whatever, and play around with that until such time as importance is at least a 7. If it's really low, there's no point moving on to planning. You're definitely going to get resistance, right? So play around with the importance part first, and then if it's at least a 7, and it could be you'll need to narrow it down. How important is it to you to get 10 minutes of exercise a day, you know, or so you may need to narrow way down or something. And then if it's, you know, reasonably high, then you start moving on to their confidence, and that gets you into the planning process. What, since I can't see your face, Paula, how are you responding to that?
Good, good. I was just busy writing notes.
Okay.
That was really helpful.
Okay. Yeah. And there is a lot to be said for being willing to have a conversation with the client about what you guys are doing. Sort of make it, do a little teeny bit of a summary of what you hear. And ask them if you got it right, and then also ask, so what do you see as the next step here? Or of these possible behaviors we've talked about, which one intrigues you most? Or, I mean, there are different ways to use key questions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really helpful.
Cool. A lot of good questions today. Any other questions or ideas for Paula?
This is Krista. I have one idea that might be helpful. I was thinking, I know sometimes when I have people that are struggling with things that I think are completely obvious, like, you know, exercising or maybe just, you know, buying vegetables or buying fruit, is that not people don't always have the skills or even the equipment that I think they have. So I know one person, after coming a couple of times to see me, and I was trying to just get her to walk every day, and we finally got to the fact that she didn't have a pair of sneakers, and that's why she wasn't walking. So, and then one woman, you know, she didn't know how to pick out fresh vegetables. So even some of the very basic things I think are causing people to struggle a little bit. So sometimes I find I have to question people more as to what they have in their house, if they've ever, you know, done these things before, if they have sneakers or workout clothes or anything like that. And because I think sometimes people just don't know where to start, and they get so overwhelmed because they want to do it, but they just don't know how, or they don't have the right tools to even try.
Yeah.
So I found this sometimes really, it's just questions.
That's a really good point. Yeah, and essentially there, if you simplify it, there are two ways to do that. One would be to do what I call 20 questions, which is, do you have sneakers? Is it safe to walk outside your house? What's the weather been like? What time? You know, that kind of thing, right? Or do you have someone to walk with? Do you like to walk with people or not? Or do you have podcasts? You know, all that. The other way to do it is to do it with an open-ended question, because essentially the answers are all in the client, and the idea is to evoke them, and it tends to save time when you can do it in an open-ended question kind of way. And indeed, I find that it's clear. This happened with a therapy client of mine yesterday, actually, who's working on some behaviors, and I didn't know where we were, so I just sort of backed up, and we sort of looked at one particular behavior, and I scaled importance, and it was really quite high. So then I asked him how confident he was going to be able to do it, and it was really low. And I could have thought of 20 questions to ask him. Instead, I said, your confidence that you'll be doing this in the next week is around a 2. Tell me what makes it a 2 instead of a 1. And he said, well, I know how to do it. I've done meditation before, and I even have some apps and things. And I said, well, what would have to be different in order for the number to be higher? See, the answers to that are in his head. They're there. And I don't follow him around all day. I don't know what he needed.
Mm-hmm.
And he surprised me. I mean, the things that he needed had to do with routine. He doesn't have routine in his life. And so we had to link it to a little bit of something that he does have some routine about. And but that was in him. I couldn't have come up with it. No.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point and interesting way you when you said you framed that question to him, what makes it a,
mm-hmm.
a 2 and not a 1, I would have gone the opposite way and not elicited any information, really. That was just a big light bulb moment.
Yeah, even if it's really low, it makes sense to scale down first. And the same thing with importance. If somebody's importance is 4 or 5, get them to tell you precisely what makes it a 4 or 5 instead of a 1 or a 2, which tends to, I mean, literally the research has shown that when people say out loud the change talk, the reasons, the number goes up just from saying it.
Yeah.
But then you also ask what would have to be different for the number to be higher.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, those are great.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I feel like I need to follow you around a good bit for maybe a week or two and absorb some more of this by osmosis.
Sure. Have you already done my STEPS program, the online program?
No, I have not. I'm still studying
when
for
you get
my
around
state
to
board
it.
Exam.
Oh,
deep in studying mode still.
It's step by step. Yeah.
Exactly. I have yet to conquer, really going deep into the MI stuff because I still have to get licensed.
Yeah, you're working on the nutrition content. I got it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
For any of you who might not know, I basically have two. I have an online program that does have 12 credits. And then I also have the 2-day counseling intensive, which includes the online program as a pre-workshop program. And so that then when we get together, we do loads of practicing. I have one other online thing that I'll mention. I think many of you may know about the ethics online program that I have. It gives 3 credits. And, of course, those of us who are registered, Paula, do need to have – I believe it's only an hour of one CEU of ethics credits every 5 years. Ought to be more than that. But anyway. Well, this has been great. And I'm afraid that I do have to cut us off at this point because I have a meeting coming up. But this has been great. And I will be, sending out the link to the recording sometime in the next few days. And if anybody is interested in any of the tips I mentioned, just email me asking for the tip, either by the number I gave you or the name as best you can remember it, and I'll send it along to you. Okay.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Take care, everybody.
Thank you very much. Happy spring, everybody. Get out walking.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye.